Welcome to Tonight in Mobile.
Hey, gang, you're rolling with rockin' Ricky Rialto, the voice of Kingston Falls, USA.
It's Tonight in Mobile.
Got my money?
Oh, yeah, I don't have it, sorry.
Oh, well, all right then. Where's my money, man?
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Engaging the people, the city, and all Port City Patriots.
This is Spock. Signal this to all decks. All weapons to full power.
All weapons to full power.
You were born a boy, you stay a boy. You were born a girl, you stay a girl.
Yes, baby! Yes, baby!
It's Tonight in Mobile with John Young.
I love this so much!
I know you do.
It's got electrolytes.
It's got electrolytes.
Yeah, it's got electrolytes.
Tonight in Mobile, presented by Neudrolix, with in-studio guests and your calls and texts. Tonight in Mobile with John Young on FM Talk 106.5.
Good evening, Port City Patriots. You are on Tonight in Mobile with Mr. Mobile. I'm your host, Mr. Mobile, also known as Chocolate Thunder. Can I get a boom? Can I get a boom?
Boom.
Thank you. Thank you, Mad Hatter. I got Lamora Nettles here from Exit Realty Promise. Welcome, Lamora. Thank you for showing up.
Thank you. Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Okay. We're going to get through our pleasantries and get right into it. You guys have to hear Exit Realty Promise story. I'm excited to have Lamora here. Julian was supposed to make it, but he's not. But let me get through the pleasantries, and then we'll get right to it. I always promote local businesses. And now that Men United Against Violence has our nonprofit status, and we are also tax exempt now. So I asked my good buddy, Greg Looney, about an accountant, and he recommended Lawrence and Lawrence CPA on Bel Air Boulevard. And I met them this morning, and I said, look, we have this nonprofit and we have our tax exempt status. I need an accountant. He said, well, you bring in less than $50,000 a year? I said, not even, like $47,000 short of $50,000. We weren't even close to that. He said, well, you could do one of two things. You could pay me $150 a year to file your paperwork, or you can go online to the IRS and do it yourself. You're a smart guy. Jeff said, you're a smart guy. You can figure out how to do it. That's why we should do business locally. Only local people will tell you the truth like that. If this is a corporation who you're nothing more than a profit margin, he would have taken my money and did something that took me 6 minutes to complete online. So if you ever have questions about a CPA, please check out Lawrence & Lawrence. This is not a paid advertisement. It's just that I promote local businesses. The phone line, the text line is 251-343-0106. Lamora, is there anyone you want to say good night to or get to bed to?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I want to say good night to my husband, Julian, my kids, Jamorian, Jalen, Jade, my mom, Ava, Mr. Craig, my sister, my nieces, my in-laws, all my wonderful agents back at Exit Realty Promise. You know, we practice get comfortable being uncomfortable.
Right.
So I had to come on this show for my agents at Exit Realty Promise.
Thank you. Yes. So let's get into it. How did you start in Exit Realty? How did you end up at Promise, Exit Realty Promise?
Okay, so Jay, I don't know if you know, I did the military for 16 years. Mm-hmm. With that time ran out, and I needed something more. I love serving my country, but I needed something more. I took my real estate class. It took me three times to pass that real estate class. It was trouble. Right. But it's not how many times it take you to pass the class. It's what you do with the license once you get it.
Right.
So after that third time, I became a real estate agent. 6 months, I didn't do anything for selling houses, listing. I had the clients. I was afraid.
What year was this?
This was 2019 when I received my license.
All right.
2019, I received my license. First 6 months, like I said, I didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. I was working in the school system, you know, barely making it. Then COVID came, and it brought out the demon in me, I guess, because I became the top agent at the past brokerage, which was Exit Realty Lyon. I became the top agent. And then 5 years later, still the top agent. So at that point, I wanted to pour into the other agents that were in the office
mm-hmm.
because I'm not a gatekeeper at all.
Uh-huh. And so you were the top agent, mm-hmm. and you decided I can do more.
Right.
And how did you get to the brokerage part? the ownership part.
The ownership
part?
How
do you make that leap?
J.Y., that was the scary part. That's the scary part. Right. The ownership, because you don't know what to expect when opening a business. You don't know. Mm-hmm. I took the training, the necessary training needed. The agents in the office, they were ready for a change, need a little motivation. But once we came into ownership, it took a lot of motivation, took a lot of dedication. I don't know if you knew this, but when we first got into real estate, me, my husband, my three kids, we stayed in a two-bedroom apartment. Mm-hmm. All the money I made, we lived as if we were still on one base income.
Mm-hmm.
All the money I made, we invested that money, me and my husband, we invested that money to rental properties.
Mm-hmm.
Those rental properties end up producing and kept producing. Well, we still stayed in that two-bedroom apartment. We had the question all the time, when are y'all going to get a house? When are we going to get a house? When are you going to move? You know your kids want their own space. Me and my husband set a goal.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to set goals. I tell people all the time, it's okay to set goals. And you are in control of your goal. So that's when we end up coming early 2025. We was like, okay, we're going to do this. We bought our house. We bought our brokerage. And it's just been up ever since.
And that's wonderful. And we were talking earlier. First, I thank the world of you two.
Oh, thank you.
You know, I do. I guess we became friends about 10 years ago when we were
right. You've been around a long time.
Right, been around. The kids were babies then.
Right.
But I told you outside, these are the stories that kids need to hear.
Right.
They don't have to go to prison or jail and get out and do the right thing. They can do the right thing the first time around, right?
Absolutely. Because me and my husband, we were both graduates of Williamson High School class of 2008 from Maysville. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I tell people all the time, I promise you, we'll never forget where we came from, but our goal is to never go back.
Mm-hmm.
But what we do have is all of our investment property in the community that we was raised in.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I want. You're self-taught.
Absolutely. Self-taught. First generation realtor. But I get a lot of that from my mom. You know, she raised me and my sister. She didn't come off of us. You know, she raised us to be the women we were today.
Mm-hmm.
So, shout out to my mom. I love you.
So, wonderful. That's right. Hey, Mom, thank you. You did a great job. But when I say you're self-taught, it takes away excuses people have for not attaining, doesn't
right.
it?
Right.
Were you frustrated? Did you ever want to give up? Did you ever think about, this is too hard?
Oh, absolutely. Like those first 6 months, I'm like, what am I doing here? I was scared. I'm afraid of failure.
Mm-hmm.
I can't be told no. I know I can be. But it hurts me to be told no, because I know what I'm capable of.
Mm-hmm.
I know my drive. I know my ambition. And I know I set my stakes extremely too high. Mm-hmm. But they're definitely accomplishable.
So we've got 2 minutes.
Okay.
I want you to give your contact information,
okay.
your realtor's name.
Okay.
How do we, if people say, I want to buy from someone that's from the community right. that was raised here,
right.
how do they get in contact with you?
So if they want to get in contact with me or any of my agents, and this is for realtors also that wants a new look on their real estate career, for y'all to join us, text join promise to 85377. Or if you are looking to buy, sell, or invest, you can text sold by promise, and that's BUY, because that's what we're doing, to 85377.
Right. And you local, do you want to say any of your realtors' names? There's so many of them.
You guys
just got back from Nashville. That's what I want to talk about. You guys just got back from Nashville.
Right.
What happened in Nashville?
Oh, what didn't happen? We learned so much. The agents, they were just so motivated. I think as soon as we got back, even on the ride back, I had several agents, Teresa, Charlotte, Janelle, Lavorsha, Varsity, all of them had pending pre-approvals or buyers that see them investing into themselves. So if you are a realtor, you have to invest in yourself. It doesn't just fall in your lap. You have to go out there and get it. Motivate yourself. We are here in the back to make sure, but we're going to make sure you're motivated. You have to motivate yourself.
I just love the story. You are the person, you, your company are the people I'll take in front of a classroom of children and let you tell your story about, I was born in Maysville. I was surrounded by the same thing, but you can work your way out of it. Because, you know, Men United Against Violence, we believe in family, education, employment, and discipline.
Right.
We believe those are the foundations of success, and you guys are the epitome of that.
Right.
And I had to have you on. I'm glad I finally got you on. Each week we try to do somebody local, and the fact that I have the honor of having you guys as my friend, it's just inspiring.
Thank you, John.
once the market, the interest rates now, I'm only paying like 2.75 interest rate. I wouldn't dare sell right now. But if right. I do, I'm going to call.
Hey, you. But you could do me a better favor.
What?
If you know someone interested in buying, selling, or investing, you can't go wrong with an Exit Realty Promise agent.
That's right. You heard of Port City Patriots. You heard it here first. We're coming back in 2 minutes, 2 seconds. Thank you so much, Lamar.
You're welcome. For being here. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Anytime.
My pleasure.
We'll be right back, guys. We are back. Tonight's show is dedicated to a book written by Brendan Kirby. You can get a copy of it at the Haunted Bookstore downtown. It is called Wicked Mobile. And it is some of the more heinous crimes committed in the port city. I was talking to my good buddy, Scroggy Baby. He said, man, you could do that on 2025 alone. I said, well, it's only a 48-minute show. So we had to go back. I'm not going to read everything because I want you to go buy the book. This is not a paid advertisement. Exit Realty being here was not paid. It's just me promoting local, right? So the first one I'm going to read about is the Fort Mims Massacre. This is chapter 2 in the book. The sound of drums announcing the noon meal time in crowded Fort Mims also was a signal for some 200 Creek Indian warriors who had been hiding all morning in thick vegetation close to the hastily constructed stockade. The warriors now sprinted toward the wide open eastern gates, swiftly but silently, war clubs, tomahawks, and a few rifles in hand. The date was August 30th, 1813. Although several hundred area settlers and soldiers had holed up inside the fort more than a month earlier for protection against the rumored Indian attacks, the defenders could hardly have been less prepared. The outer gate on the western side of the stockade was unbolted, and both gates on the eastern side were open. The soldiers were hungover after a night of whiskey and whimsy. The sentry charged with watching the horizon for signs of Indians, instead was looking over his shoulder at a card game. He did not spot the invading force until the warriors were 30 steps away. When he finally did spy them, it was too late. Indians! The guard yelled, shooting his musket in the air. The Indians! The Indians! The warning set off panicked confusion in the camp. Men scurried for their weapons. Major Daniel Beasley, the man in command of the fort's defenses, raced to shut the massive outer gate. But it had been open for weeks, and rainstorms that frequently battered the Mobile area during the summer months had pushed a wall of dirt against the gate. Unable to budget, Beasley quickly found a horde of Indians upon him and suffered a gunshot or a blow to the stomach from a spiked war club. Trampled and dazed, Beasley managed to crawl behind the gate and yell to his men to make a stand just before he died. The ensuing battle raged all day long. When it was over, it had become the bloodiest massacre of American civilians in U.S. history up to that point. Hundreds on both sides died, and the conquering Creeks brutally bludgeoned women and children among the survivors and claimed some 250 scalps as trophies. A Mobile Daily Register article in 1884 recounted the massacre from the perspective of a 105-year-old black man named Tony Morgan. Tony Morgan claimed to have been a slave of Judge Harry Tolman. I wonder if that's Tolmanville, you know, Tolman. Harry
Tolman. How's it spelled?
The same way as Tolman, T-O-U-L-M-I-N.
Probably. Okay.
Yeah, I would think so. Maybe some of you Mobile history buffs could get into that. He told the newspaper that he was inside the fort at the time of the attack. He recalled an officer from the Fort Stoddard warning of an imminent Indian attack. That warning, according to the newspaper, went unheeded. My third grade teacher, Miss Leek, often talked about the Fort Mims Massacre. And I guess this is when we were taught Alabama history in schools. I'm not sure if they're teaching now. They're probably teaching feelings about Alabama history in school, which is unfortunate. The Fort Mims Massacre deserves to be remembered. Because the person who drew up the battle plan for the Creek Indians against the fort was William Weatherford. The book describes him as a strapping man in his 30s who had grown up with one foot in the Indian world and the other one in the white. His mother, Sehoy III, was a member of the influential Wind Clan of the Creek people. His father, Charles Weatherford, was a red-haired Scotsman who had ridden into the Upper Creek Territory with Samuel Mims in 1779 or early 1780 to escape the Revolutionary War. Creek society was matrilineal, meaning inheritance and family identity passed through mothers, not fathers. By marrying Sehoy, Charles Weatherford gained a measure of status. He participated in Greek council meetings and trafficked in stolen horses and slaves. So this wasn't an Indian that formulated this plan. It was a half Creek Indian, half Irishman that formulated this plan. And like I said, I'm not going to read the conclusion of the book. I want you to go out and buy it. I don't get any sales from the proceeds of the book, or any. I don't get any proceeds from the sale of the book, but you all should have an interest in Alabama history. This is a fascinating story that's very important. I think they do a memorial for Fort Mims every year around that date on August 30th, 1813. The next one, really quick, is the murder and the oak tree. At 9:30 on the afternoon of February 20th, 1835, the jailer rapped on the door of the cell where Charles R.S. Boynton had spent the last 9 months chained to a wall. The young man had been dreading this day ever since a Mobile County judge sentenced him on November 29, 1834, to die for the brutal slaying of his friend and roommate, Nathaniel Forrest. Even as the jailer led him to the procession that would carry him to his death, Boynton held out faint hope that he might yet somehow avoid his fate. He asked the jailer if the governor perhaps had arrived. He had not. Boynton had spent the previous 2.5 hours in conversation and prayer with Reverend William T.H. Hamilton, pastor of Government Street Presbyterian Church, who had spent several mostly fruitless months trying to persuade the condemned man to atone and accept God. Boynton wrote a letter to his mother and another one to his brother. Then it was time to march. More than an hour from the big iron gates on St. Emmanuel Street side of the jail, north to Government Street, west to St. Charles Street, then south a little past Church Street through the area known as the Buzzard's Roost for the birds that would swoop down for the scraps left by neighborhood butchers. The route had been chosen so Boynton would have to pass by the spot where Frost's body, badly mangled and bloodied, had been found the previous May. It was just outside the cemetery where Boynton would soon be buried. Boynton walked to, on the afternoon of May 10th, 1834, Boynton and Frost took a walk. Several people saw them near the Church Street graveyard, but Boynton was alone when he returned to the boarding house at about 9 p.m. Several of the boarders asked where Nathaniel was. "Oh, he is somewhere, and I am in a hurry. I did not wait for him," Boynton said. Boynton seemed restless, distracted, and slightly pale. "You went out walking. Where is he?" one of the men asked. "Yes, and I brought him back," Boynton answered. Boynton walked to Morris and Fraser's livery on St. Francis Street, which sported a sign reading, "Horses for General Hire by Day, Week, or Month." Boynton paid for a horse and then made his way to the wharf, stopping at a general store to buy a pair of pistols, a dagger, and some other items. At 8 o'clock, he boarded the James Monroe, a steamer ship headed up the Alabama River toward Montgomery. The next day, passersby discovered Frost's body under a large chicopin tree on the west side of Bayou Street, south of Government Street. Covered in wounds and blood, the body had 5 distinct gashes on the front that investigators determined had been made with a large knife. Frost's head had bruises and gashes, covered his back, arms, and legs. Even in a lawless town that had grown accustomed to robberies and killing, the scene caused a sensation. The annals of crime have seldom been stained with a more diabolical act of atrocity than now. "Our painful duty at this time to record," wrote the Mobile Commercial Register and Patriot. "Murder, $500 reward," blared the local newspaper the next day. Mayor John Stocking had offered $250 for the capture of Boynton, whom investigators already had fingered as the chief suspect, and another $250 if he was convicted. years after the affair, Mobilia named J.J. Dale Champs. Yeah, those Dale Champs.
Oh.
Recalls sitting on the porch as a teenager with his friends James T. Shelton, who would grow up to become sheriff in 1859. Patsy, a 12 or 13-year-old slave belonging to Shelton's father, came running up the street. "Master Jim, when I was looking for the cows a little while ago, I saw two men, a tall one and a short one, fighting under the big chickapin back of the graveyard. They were hitting just so, making motions. The tall man fall down all bloody. I was scared and ran away." Shelton and Dale Champs, not to say anything as a slave, Patsy's eyewitness account would be worthless in court. Anyway, later Patsy would say that she recognized Boynton at the gallows as the short man she had seen during the fight. I got the single finger salute from the Mad Hatter. So we're coming up on our second break.
Yes, sir.
We're talking about Wicked Mobile, a book written by Brendan Kirby. You can find it at the Haunted Bookstore downtown. When we come back from our break, we'll talk about the Copeland Clan and the burning of Mobile. Tonight at Mobile with Mr. Mobile, we're talking about Mobile history. Thank you, guys. We'll be right back. Welcome back, Port City Patriots, to Tonight in Mobile with Mr. Mobile. I'm not a self-made man. I have many wise people that I draw from and draw inspiration from and have conversations with. I talk daily to my brothers. There are several people I work with and friends I have that are not in my profession that inspire me every day. And every time I feel like quitting, they don't allow me to. And some of those guys are Eddie's Wholesale Jewelry and Pawn. They don't need my advertisement. You guys know who they are. They've been around 50 years. But they sponsor the show so I can be on air. I lost a sponsor recently, but the Lord will provide someone new. But Eddie's Wholesale Jewelry and Pawn is located at 266 East High 65 Service Road North. Their phone number is 251-479-4653 or 251-479-GOLD. Ed and Sandra are there almost every day. Well, Ed is there almost every day. Sandra shows up whenever she wants. And she has the right to, you know, that's right. But Braxton will be there most of the time, he and his beard will be there most of the time. Miss Gully would be upset if she heard me say him and his beard. Miss Gowdy. Braxton, JJ is going to be there. JJ loves hugs. Dean, Carson, Emma, Juanita, Becky, and Dolly. Whatever your needs are, they have it there, whether it's electronics, firearms, jewelry, socket sets, drums, guitars, you name it. They have it. So check there before you go to a pay retail price. Go check out a local store that's been around 50 years. They have a history. Tell them Chocolate Thunder sent you, and Braxton will let you comb his beard. So I'm always grateful for everyone that supports the show, Neudrolix, Alabama Injury and Pain Clinic, Friends of Trip Pittman. There's no way in the world I would be on the air without them. So our next chapter from Wicked Mobile is Chapter 4, The Copeland Clan and the Burning of Mobile. As night fell over Mobile on October 7th, 1839, man, the 1800s were busy in Mobile. 1813, 1834, this was a Wild West town, wasn't it? Good grief. A band of men decked out in fake whiskers, false mustaches, and other disguises waited at the edge of the city. Some wore green eye patches, others dressed like sailors. They came armed with false keys, lockpicks, crowbars, along with revolvers, bowie knives, and dark lanterns. The men had planned for this night for weeks, casing the city's commercial district and making note of where the most valuable merchandise was. At 9 o'clock, a half dozen friendly members of the city guard sent word that the coast was clear. By 10 o'clock, the men started out. They used a key to open a fancy dry goods store, swiping $15,000 worth of fine silks, muslins, and other items. They pilfered silver watches and 2 to 3 gold timepieces, together worth $4,000 to $5,000. Some $3,000 worth of fine goods from a large clothing store disappeared into the burglars' hands. At 11:30 with a change of the city guard a half hour away, the burglars packed their loot into their butcher's carts that had procured, setting fire to the looted stores. As they made their way toward the waterfront, the bandits hit every store they came to. Wind from the southeast spread the flames, and soon someone yelled fire. An alarm bell sounded on Conception Street. The men worked through the rest of the night loading a pair of boats while chaos gripped the city. Just before daylight, two fully packed vessels shoved off and traveled 10 miles south from Mobile, arriving at their destination at about 8 a.m. Tired but satisfied, the thieves held a meeting to report their haul. An estimated $25,000 worth, including an abundant supply of liquors and groceries. They divided the score with the three leaders, Gail H. Wages, Charles McGrath, and James Copeland. Taking about $6,000 worth each, they each selected the finest and most expensive items for themselves, packing jewelry, silks, and other goods into trunks. The Wages and Copeland clan had struck again. Meanwhile, Mobile was in flames. The fire had come just 5 days after another conflagration at a furniture store on Dolphin Street burned a city block. This one was far more devastating, and it hardly could have come at a worse time. The city was in the throes of one of its periodic yellow fever outbreaks, which meant that many able-bodied citizens were out of the city, and many of the men who remained were sick. The police and militia roused people from their homes so they could blow them up in a desperate attempt to create firebreaks to stop the flames from spreading. Commission merchant Duke Goodman wrote to lawyer and politician James Dullett the next day that he had managed to save most of the furniture from his house, which had been destroyed. The city awoke that day to find much of Dolphin Street between Conception and Franklin Streets in ashes. Some 500 buildings had burned on several blocks to either side of Dolphin Street. Hundreds now were homeless. Investigators estimated the monetary loss at $2 million. This is a part of Mobile history that I think we forget, that downtown Mobile burned. And we should remember it. We have such a rich history here in Mobile, and it's a shame that we, whether we're reluctant or just ignorant now because school doesn't teach. I remember at Palmer Pillins, there was Mobile history was taught in school. Alabama history was taught in middle school. I wonder if the curriculums are there now or if they're just teaching kids about their feelings. But we have a rich history here, and we should embrace it. I thought one time about doing a walking tour based on this book in downtown Mobile and pointing out these key locations of places where the homicides occurred or where the burning of downtown Mobile occurred, you know, and the Copeland gang is a very important part. And I encourage you all to go get the book and read about what they did in Mobile. And I don't know if some of these names, they're very familiar, but maybe they do have current context of people we know. Copeland, Tolman, Dell Champs. Those are names that we've heard around Mobile for years. So hopefully some history buffs out there will go find out. Call in, text in 251-343-0106 for your questions and comments. What do you think about this? Chapter 6 of this movie is Raising Joe Kane. In the winter of 1866, Mobile was a broken city. It had managed to escape the long Civil War without the physical pounding inflicted on so many other southern cities. But the economy was in tatters. Prosperous and booming from a vibrant cotton trade on the eve of the conflict, the Union blockade and deprivation from the war had taken a heavy toll. The war interrupted virtually every aspect of civic life, including the city's famous love affair and frivolity. Since the 1830s, social organizations had thrill crowds on New Year's Eve with elaborate parades, with most young men fighting for the Confederate Army and the rest of the city supporting the war effort. Those parades had been suspended. The year 1866 was, according to book Chasing the Devil Round a Stump, a year of doom for the Southland. Amidst this dependence, Joseph Stilwell Kane stepped forward to lift the city's spirits. With six Confederate war veterans dressed in Confederate regalia, Joe Kane appeared with a charcoal wagon marching through the streets to the delight of the people and the shock of occupying soldiers from the Union Army. Kane had spent the previous Fat Tuesday in New Orleans and watched the admiration as revelers celebrated Mardi Gras. He returned to Mobile, determined to spread the tradition into his hometown. Kane, dressed in Chickasaw Indian clothing, a fur skirt and deerskins, strode along Chickasaw-style hair and headdress. The tribe had been carefully chosen as it never had been defeated in battle, the perfect symbol for embarrassing Union soldiers who still occupied the city. Kane called his character Chief Slacka Bemorinico.
Slacka Bemorinico.
Thank you. Thank you, Mad Hatter. Thank you, Mad Hatter. That's the assist for the victory. And the group made raucous music as it marched to a humiliated city. It was a subtle act of defiance in the face of occupiers. Kane, after all, could not have a rebel flag in front of the troops during the parade. Many Mobilians invited them into their homes. It meant a whole people could still look up and look up in pride and still keep going. States chasing the devil. And that is how Mobile's modern Mardi Gras celebration started. Kane returned the following Fat Tuesday dressed in a tall, plumed hat and red knee boots and spurs. He and his band called themselves the Lost Cause Minstrels. An air parade drew a trail of delighted children. In 1868, Kane was accompanied by 16 Confederate veterans, including future Judge Oliver Sims, the son of Confederate Admiral Raphael Sims, the Order of Myths, the OOMs, Mobile's oldest current Mardi Gras association, joined the celebration that year. At least that's the legend. That's the version every Mobilian from native son to transplant learns. It has been repeated in scores of books, newspapers, and magazines and articles over the decades. Shoddy and inconsistent record keeping about a topic as frivolous as Mardi Gras combined with Mobile's many fires make it impossible to determine the accurate history of the city's most famous carnival icon. The real Joe Kane was a minor Mardi Gras figure before a 1962 publication of Chasing the Devil Around a Stump. That work marked the zenith of Julian Lee Judy Radford. Go get the book, folks. Go get the book, Wicked Mobile. Read about these things for yourself. Brush up on our history so that when we speak about Mobile, we travel in different places, we can speak intelligently and knowledgeably about what our city has to offer and where we've been and what we've been through. It's not always pretty. I think everyone can say that about their history. We're coming up on our final break. We'll be back tonight in Mobile with Mr. Mobile. Thank you. Welcome back to Night in Mobile with Mr. Mobile. We're in our last 10 minutes of the segment. You say we have some messages there, Mad Hatter?
Sure. We got one. He says, love the history books you're telling us about. Got my copy of Hidden History of Mobile you recently discussed. Thank you. We'll have to find a copy of tonight's book.
Tonight's book is titled Wicked Mobile. It's written by Brendan Kirby. It is an excellent book. You can get it at the Haunted Bookstore downtown. I recommend it. My good friend at work, Major William Reed, had it on his wall. I said, hey, dude, let me check out that book. And then I remembered I read it maybe 2 years ago. So it is an incredible book. It is a book that you can reread, and I recommend it for everyone to learn Mobile history, because if you don't, then you are bound to repeat it. I want to take the final few minutes to talk about a couple of things that have come out. I'm not retiring. I have 2 years to go to get to 25, and I'm going to fight like crazy to get there. It seems like, you know, now is the time that there might be miscommunications or discouragements, but I'll get to 25 years, so I'm not retiring. There's still a lot of work to do, and I wouldn't know where to go to earn as much money as I earn now. And plus, I can't leave until my radio show is as popular as Sean and Dalton. You know, I can't leave until I'm in that rarefied space. So we're still trying to get the show off the air, but to put, and if I saw it on Facebook, my brother called me, I received a few other phone calls.
Off the ground.
Right, you know.
On the air, off the ground.
On the air and off the ground, dude, you know. popular and have a 2-hour spot, and I'm just as popular as Wolfman Jack. You know, make your little quiver. You know, some strutting your stuff. You know, that's the first thing. And the second thing I want to address is this. I was sent a picture of a billboard on St. Stephen's Road about that had clowns. I think it said "Vote out the clowns," and immediately the reaction of so many people was that it was somehow a play on blackface. And my initial response when I saw it was, well, what's that mean? You know, what's the significance of it? And folks, let's not let anyone make this election about ethnicity and color. The billboard states, it's time to get the clowns out. And it has clowns. There are two animated cartoon clowns at the bottom left, bottom right corner. And then the clowns in the billboard are clowns who happen to be black people. No one can really say who they are. But blackface is a white person wearing black makeup on to emulate black skin, and normally they'll have white makeup on their lips, exaggerating the features of black people. This is not that. Let's save our outrage for accusing of racist when it is clearly racist. This is someone, and I haven't confirmed it, that is a black person who rents the billboard who's saying, let's vote the clowns out of public office. And my friend Jesse Williams called people clowns of all shades because of their behavior. So I am, for one, I'm asking everyone to calm down and look at this from the lens of someone who's displeased with elected officials, and he referred to them as clowns. Would it have made it any less, would it make his line of thinking any less effective if the clowns were white or Asian? Or no, his point is, let's get rid of the clowns. And because of the area that the billboard is put up is predominantly black, it seems fitting that you would have clowns in the area. It's, I mean, just like the Colt 45 and Cool cigarette commercials they have in those areas, all the people in the McDonald's commercials are black. So in my perspective, this is not blackface. It's obviously, these are not white people mocking black people. This is this person with the billboard mocking elected officials. And we shouldn't allow anyone to continue giving us these dog whistle moments to make us angry at one another. I will not argue with someone I know about someone I do not know. I only know certain people from television. I can only guess what they're saying and doing is right, and I agree with them. But to have a dispute with a friend, someone I know, over someone I don't, to me, is ludicrous. It's like people who argue over football games and fist fight and fall out because their favorite team lost and someone says something to you. Well, that coach is making $5-10 million a year. Those players are making millions of dollars. And if you called them and said, man, I just cursed out my mama, will you pay my rent? They probably hang up on you. With the same people that are screaming for politicians like you're cheering for a football game or a football team. Let's be realistic about it. So I'm always reluctant to say anything political because the radio show, my job, I have friends with different political ideas. But this has to be addressed, Mobile. The only way we unite, and Mad Hatter, you know, I put a lot of effort in trying to bring people together.
Sure.
It doesn't always work. I feel underappreciated. I surely feel it's a thankless job. No one ever... there are several people who come up and tell me thank you, but it's never from the places that I think it will come. But I pursue further and continue trying to unite, even in the face of danger, scorn, or ridicule, or even false accusation that I have to defend myself against. But because of the stance I've made, because I've said family, education, employment, and discipline, self-accountability, and responsibility, I've been called a sellout. Someone posted on a page, I was called a coon. I've been called an Uncle Tom. I've been called all these things because my stance is self-responsibility and accountability. We had my friend Lamora on who described being self-made and hard work and determination. And it doesn't matter where you start, it's where you are. And you take advantage of the opportunities you have. And that's all I say. But I have been ridiculed and criticized because I asked black men to stop killing one another. I asked black men to raise their families. So when I see things like this billboard and see the response that people are trying to say it is blackface, it just isn't. And I have a duty, Mad Hatter, to tell the truth. Sure. I have a duty to call every Mobilian to calm down, take a step back, and think about it. Vote for whomever you want in this upcoming runoff. Whatever your conscience tells you to vote for, vote. And it isn't necessary that you discuss it publicly. Facebook is the last place in the world to try to have a civilized, intelligent conversation. Anonymity gives people plenty of room to say what they want. There's no fear of being smacked. That's something we need to do now. We need to smack more people for the stupidity that they say and the lies that they spit out. But I digress. But you're not going to get intelligent conversations on Facebook. So this whole clown billboard thing, it isn't what it seems. It's a clown. And since when can't black people be clowns? And since when can't black politicians be considered clowns? And when can a black man say, vote out these clowns? We shouldn't want clowns in government. We shouldn't. Look, the weak should never lead the strong. The weak should never dictate to the strong. Sucker MCs, candy-coated creme-filled sucker MCs should never try to hold a B-boy stance. They can't rock the mic, and we need to remember that. And when our elected officials no longer serve us, we should replace them. And it may be going into the unknown. I don't know what this new person is going to do, but I know what this person has done. And that might be one of the things that we can use to decide who we vote for. Educate yourself on candidates. Don't let anyone manipulate you with fear or intimidation or the hope of I'm going to get something from it. Don't ever let someone tell you because they look like you or don't look like you, they can be trusted or are not worthy of trust. If you're going to judge a man by his character, then judge a man by his character. Jesus Christ made us free, John 8:35-37, and the seventh abideth night in the house forever, but the Son abideth ever. If the Son therefore shall make you free, you shall be free indeed. I know that you're Abraham's seed, but you seek to kill me. We have no place in you. If Christ is in you, then you are free indeed. And everyone who believes in Christ is a brother to one another. 1 Corinthians 12:12. For as the body is one and hath many members, and all the members of that one body being many are one body, so also is Christ. For by one Spirit are we all baptized into the body, whether we be Jews or Gentiles, whether we be bond or free, and have all been made to drink into one Spirit. For the body is not one member, but many. So for everyone who's arguing over politicians in football, remember, your brother and sister are the people that hear and doeth the word. Tonight in Mobile with Mr. Mobile, we'll be back next Monday. I'll have on the Mobile Homeless Outreach, Justin, Dr. Hyde, Mr. Hyde, Howard will come on next week. Thank you, guys. God bless Mobile. God bless America. I love the port city. Tonight in Mobile with Mr. Mobile, we'll see you next week. Thank you.